Welcome to another deep dive from Next Chapter News, the place to go for in-depth explorations. Today we're going deep into some chilling true crime files from Charlotte, North Carolina, way back in the early 90s.
Yeah, we're going to be focusing on Henry Louis Wallace, the so-called Taco Bell Strangler. And, you know, he confessed to 11 murders, but what we're really interested in is, beyond those victims, are there others out there?
Were there others? Right. I mean, it's a horrifying number to begin with, but that possibility, it's just haunting. And that's what we're going to be looking at today, right here on nextchapternews.com. You know, you've expressed interest in understanding how patterns in crime, they get identified, they get missed sometimes, and the impact that that has on communities. And I think this case really brings all of those things to light.
Absolutely.
So, okay, let's start with Wallace himself. What can you tell me about his background?
So Henry Louis Wallace was born in 1965 in Barmel, South Carolina. And in November 1991, he moved to Charlotte. He was a Navy veteran, actually, and he had a history of some, you know, petty crimes, some smaller offenses. But by 1992, he was managing a Taco Bell near Eastland Mall.
So he was kind of living this, you know, seemingly normal, average life, yet underneath this capacity for this incredible violence.
It's a chilling contrast, for sure. So when did his crimes, the ones we know of, begin in Charlotte?
So the confirmed timeline of his murders in Charlotte goes from May 1992 to March 1994. However, there's also a murder in Barnwell that happened earlier back in 1990. And in Charlotte alone, 10 women were strangled. And he was convicted for 9 of these murders, receiving 9 death sentences in 1997. Now, the Barnwell case involving Tashonda Mathia never actually went to trial because of jurisdictional issues.
It's interesting, right? Like, 10 women in Charlotte in that short span of time, it just boggles the mind. And it wasn't random, right? He had a certain type of victim, a way of operating. Right, exactly. He was very specific. He mainly targeted women he already knew. So we're talking friends, coworkers, neighbors. And often he could get into their homes without even forcing entry. So that really shows a certain level of trust that was betrayed, you know. He took advantage of these women. And the attacks themselves always involved rape and strangulation. And then sometimes he would go even further and try to stage the crime scenes, you know, manipulate the scene. I mean, that just adds another level of just disturbing premeditation to it all.
Yeah, a real sense of control. Unfortunately. So what led to his capture after, you know, almost 2 years of this terror in Charlotte?
It all ended after a really horrible spree. He murdered 3 women in just 4 days. It was March 1994. And the thing that really broke the case open was a palm print. And that palm print was connected to the car of one of the victims, Betty Baucom. And after they arrested him, Wallace confessed. And he went on for 12 hours just detailing the murders of Shauna Hawk, Brandy Henderson, DeBarra Slaughter. He even led the police to where they could find the remains of Caroline Love, who had been missing since way back in 1992.
So pretty massive confession. And, you know, going back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, is there a chance that there were other victims out there other than the 11 that he confessed to?
It's a scary thought, but there's some evidence to support that. You know, during his interrogation, he mentioned others when he was talking about his victims. So that really leaves things open-ended. It could suggest there were more. And then there's also Professor Carice Costin, who's a criminal justice professor, and she said that Wallace actually claimed to have murdered almost 20 people around the world during his time in the Navy.
Wow.
Now, that specific claim, that hasn't been verified yet, but it just adds to this idea that he was capable of, you know, so much more violence.
And then you add to that the fact that Charlotte at that time had a pretty high murder rate. It's almost, like, sadly conceivable that some cases might have just, I don't know, fallen through the cracks.
That's right. You know, in the early 90s, Charlotte was dealing with a lot of violence. The murder rate was incredibly high. We're talking 129 murders in 1993 alone, you know? And a lot of that was due to the crack cocaine epidemic, which was putting so much strain on the police and their resources. So the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, or CMPD, ended up with a backlog of over 600 cold cases. So yeah, in that kind of environment, it's entirely possible that some patterns, some connections were missed, especially in the beginning, when it wasn't clear that they were dealing with a serial killer.
So are there any specific cold cases from that time that, you know, even though we don't know for sure, could be linked to Wallace?
Well, it's possible, and it's definitely worth looking into. During that time, they were finding a lot of unidentified female remains, particularly in wooded areas. There were also missing women reports, particularly in East Charlotte, and that's the same area where Wallace was operating, right? So it's not impossible to think that some of these cases could fit his victim profile. young Black women who were strangled, maybe even connected to him in some way, like through friends or acquaintances. The problem is we don't have names, we don't have DNA matches, so it's all speculation. But it's definitely plausible, given what we know about his crimes and those ambiguous hints he dropped during interrogation.
It's just, it's hard not to wonder if there were any missed opportunities in the investigation early on that maybe could have identified him sooner or even uncovered these other potential victims. Have any of the people involved in the case talked about that?
Yeah, Gary McFadden, he was a detective on the case, and he later became sheriff. He's talked about how in the early stages of the investigation, the murders of Black women who came from marginalized communities were maybe, perhaps unintentionally, not given the same level of attention, the same level of priority. He actually used the term ZIP code cases, which I think is really powerful because it shows how where someone lives, their socioeconomic status, might have affected how their case was handled.
That's a really disturbing thought.
It is. And he also pointed out that some things about the crimes themselves should have raised some red flags earlier on. The fact that there was no forced entry, the fact that he always used strangulation, which isn't all that common, and the fact that the crime scenes were relatively neat, all of those things could have pointed to a serial killer, you know, a pattern. But it wasn't until those two murders happened really close together, the deaths of Betty Baucom and Brandy Henderson at the Lake Apartments in March 1994, that investigators really started to see the connections.
It's a shame, really, that it took so long for those dots to connect. But it wasn't just within law enforcement, right? I mean, the community itself, they were pretty vocal about wanting answers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Community advocates like Dee Sumpter, who was the mother of Shauna Hawk, were absolutely critical in this case. She, along with others, started groups like Mothers of Murdered Offspring, and they demanded accountability from law enforcement. They basically said that the police were treating these deaths like isolated incidents, maybe even blaming them on the lifestyles of the victims, instead of seeing the bigger picture, this pattern of violence that was happening. And when Wallace finally confessed, it really just showed that they were right to be concerned all along. But unfortunately, it took too long. And I think that just shows how important it is to pay attention to those early warning signs.
You know, it just makes you think, could there be more victims out there? Like maybe coworkers from Taco Bell who went missing, or neighbors who disappeared, or maybe even deaths that were initially thought to be overdoses, but maybe weren't.
That's definitely a possibility. I mean, were there people in his life who just vanished and no one really looked into it? Could there be cases where the cause of death was misidentified? It's those kinds of questions that make this case so unsettling. The CMPD has said that race didn't affect how they investigated these cases, and they point to the clearance rates for Black victims during that time. But the fact is, this guy, this serial killer, he was able to operate for almost 2 years before they caught him. That just tells me that there were missed opportunities, regardless of why.
It's a hard thing to think about. You know, 9 women we know he murdered, and then the possibility that there could be more out there that we may never know about. So where's Wallace now?
Well, as of March 17th, 2025, Henry Louis Wallace is still on death row at Central Prison in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's been appealing his sentences under the state's Racial Justice Act, which is ongoing. And it's interesting because apparently his physical condition has changed a lot. They say he weighs about 400 pounds now. And he's been pretty quiet, hasn't given any interviews since his prison wedding back in 1998, which is a huge contrast to how talkative he was after he was arrested, right? I mean, he confessed in detail for hours and hours.
And we have to remember those women, the ones we know for sure that he killed.
Absolutely. We need to remember their names. Caroline Love, Shauna Hawk, Audrey Spain, Valencia Jumper, Michelle Stinson, Vanessa Mack, Betty Baucom, Brandy Henderson, and Debra Slaughter. And we can't forget Tashonda Bethea, the young woman he killed in Barnwell, and Sharon Nance, a sex worker whose death he confessed to, even though that case never went to a jury. They're the ones we know about, and their family, I mean, they've suffered such a loss, we can't let them be forgotten.
And it's that thought, right, that there could be more women out there, more families who don't have answers. It's just, it's a heavy thing to carry.
It really is. The Charlotte Cold Case Unit, I'm sure this weighs on them. But, you know, there's always hope. Forensic science is always advancing. We've got things like genetic genealogy now, which have solved so many cold cases that seemed hopeless before. So maybe someday we'll have more answers. Maybe we'll be able to link Wallace to some of these unidentified cases.
And, you know, if any of our listeners out there have any information at all, no matter how small it seems, what should they do?
If you have any information about missing or murdered women in Charlotte from the early 90s, even if you think it's not important, please call the CMPD's Cold Case Unit. Their number is 704-336-7600. You can also call Charlotte Crime Stoppers anonymously at 704-334-1000. That call, you know, even if it seems like a small detail, it could be the missing piece. It could help a family finally get some answers after all this time.
It's sad to think that we may never know the full extent of what Henry Lewis Wallace did. He's not talking anymore, so those secrets may die with him. But these possible unnamed victims, they're a reminder that investigating these crimes, it's complicated. And it's a reminder that sometimes, especially in marginalized communities, people are more vulnerable. But there's always hope, right? There's always hope that someday we'll get answers for these cold cases.
This has been a deep dive into the Henry Lewis Wallace case, and it's just one part of our ongoing true crime coverage here at nextchapternews.com. We really encourage you to check out our site for more information on this case. And, you know, there's just some big questions to think about here, like what can we do to make sure that every victim of violence is seen, that their story is heard, that they're remembered?
It makes you think, right, about the challenges that investigators face when the patterns aren't clear at first. And about how, you know, maybe some cases don't get the attention they deserve. So I want you to consider this. What's our responsibility as a community to make sure that no one is forgotten, that every life is valued? Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
Thank you.